I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, a group that advocates for those living in poverty says it is now opposed to a bill that would hasten PSE's move away from natural gas. Plus, an email that proves Democrats are simply the mouthpiece for powerful unions. And finally, a government AI program meant to flag election threats is instead targeting factual information, including information from yours truly. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Last week of the session, I know we've been session heavy. It's only 60 days. We got to get at it while the getting's good. So just a few days left. I'm going to start the show just by reminding you that as far as we know, the quote-unquote gas ban bill is still in play. We described on the show yesterday. And then if you didn't join us, we actually came back on around 2:30 to give you a breaking update. Democrats really screwed up on HB 1589. Last week, the lieutenant governor, who's a Democrat, said the thing was a hot mess. The way it was written, it violated Senate rules. They went back, tried to fix it. Turned out over the weekend, they missed an amendment, a Stryker amendment. They didn't fix it. And so now it's like, well, what do we do? Because if they just go forth and pass it as is, it will be easy to sue over and to win over. So right now, we were told maybe the House is going to vote on it. But if they vote on the version that was written poorly, again, somebody's just going to sue over it and the thing will get overturned, which actually might be the best case scenario. So yes, House, please just vote on the broken version. But just a call to action again, what we're talking about is House Bill 1589. This started as a full-on ban on new gas hookups and also allowed PSE to stop serving existing customers. Now, it has been watered down, but I do believe the effect is the same. What the bill does is hastens PSE's move away from natural gas. So that means that, okay, you might not have banned new hookups, but nobody's going to build a house with natural gas hookups if you know that PSE is going to move away from it, if you're in the service area. If you have a house like mine that relies on natural gas, we're going to have to start saving money in the eventuality that PSE stops serving us natural gas. That's going to cost tens of thousands of dollars for the average Washingtonian. So I have been urging you guys to write to your elected leaders. I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans. I don't care if you're in PSE's service area or not. We've been urging you to go email your senators and your representatives and just let them know the impact it would have on you if you could no longer have natural gas service in your home. So please continue to do that until we've been told that, hey, this thing is done. Now, I will say that a lot of you listened to us yesterday, and you did indeed email your elected leaders, and a few of you just happened to be represented by State Senator Emily Randall in Olympia, who, may I remind you, I have been calling out for utter hypocrisy because during our last big snowstorm, she posted a picture at her neighbor's house saying, when the furnace stops working in the coldest day, grateful for helpful friends and gas fireplaces and cozy socks and a roof over our heads. So here she is, roasting her tootsies by a natural gas fire while she turns around a year or a month and a half later and tries to speed up PSE customers, then move away from us being able to use natural gas. So she gets to stay warm. She's not even in the PSE area, service area. So she gets to stay warm with natural gas, not us, over the next couple years. So anyway, I saw a couple of you had reached out because that's your state senator and she voted for this thing. Here's one of the responses that was given. And I imagine this was just a blanket. So I'm sure anyone who reached out to Senator Emily Randall's office got this in response. Let me read it. It's from her legislative intern. Thank you for reaching out. This bill does not ban natural gas. This bill no longer prohibits the extension of new residential gas service after 2023, as it did in the previous year's version. Furthermore, it maintains utilities' obligation to serve natural gas customers without altering it to include other energy resources, such as green hydrogen or renewable natural gas, as proposed in an earlier version of the bill. This section of the bill was removed through a floor amendment. As far as prices go, there will be programs that offer incentives and rebates to help cover costs once this bill comes into effect. So a few things there. Again, they're correct. That is a factually accurate response that they removed the two worst parts of this bill, the outright ban on new hookups and ending PSE's obligation to serve. However, the very purpose of this bill, and it's in part of implementing the Climate Commitment Act, is to do away with natural gas. That is the very purpose of this bill, to speed up PSC's ability to eventually go to the Utilities and Transportation Commission and say, we're not going to serve natural gas anymore. So it's not a ban in name, but it is a ban in effect. And so are they being factually accurate in this email? Yes. Are they being disingenuous? Yes. What her office should be saying is, hey, we're trying to move the state away from natural gas. This will help PSC do that. It's not going to happen yet. But yes, if you have natural gas hookups in your home, we are going to eventually, as a state, try to move away from that. We think that's the right policy. Wouldn't it be nice if elected leaders were just honest about what the impacts are going to be? And then that little part that says, as far as prices go, there will be programs that offer incentives and rebates to help cover costs once this bill comes into effect. So there's two cost increases that are going to result from HB 1589. Your gas prices, if you have natural gas from PSC, they're going to shoot way, 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 way up. So that's a problem for people who are poor and working class. And then, of course, eventually, if you have to replace your gas fireplace, your gas range, you're talking $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a household. You really think the government's going to offer you any sort of rebates that come close to covering the costs associated with that? No, not even close. And they shouldn't suggest that it is somehow going to ease your burden in any meaningful way. Now, that might be why we got our hands on an internal email from the Washington State Community Action Partnership. This was sent out to lawmakers yesterday. And what the Washington State Community Action Partnership does is it works on behalf of people who are experiencing poverty. That is its sole mission. I will say, though, I tend to see it as a Democrat progressive aligned organization, which is very interesting considering they sent lawmakers an email saying they now oppose this. They went from being neutral on HB 1589 to flat out opposing it. And they did not mince words in this email. The general gist of the email is, hey, we support an orderly move away from natural gas, but we cannot support the version of this bill that passed in the Senate because clearly it's not an orderly move away from natural gas. I mean, the lieutenant governor called the bill a hot mess. And then second, it is going to hurt the poor. And we were told that this wouldn't hurt the poor. And it's clearly going to hurt the poor, just like Republicans are saying. I'll read just a couple quotes from this email. We are supportive of an orderly transition away from natural gas, but it must be equitable to our low-income and named communities. Without sufficient protections in place for ratepayers, we have changed our position on this bill from neutral to opposed in its current form. If this bill passes in its current form, we will assuredly be coming back to the legislature in the very near future with a request for more resources to protect those low-income communities who will experience the deepest impacts. Our neighbors across Washington State should not be burdened with additional payments to PSE's shareholders without a commitment to retire natural gas pipes. So they're basically saying, and again, it's a very progressive group and mindset. They're like, hey, it might be worth it if we hurt poor people as long as we get rid of natural gas. That's how I read that is, you know, they're more concerned about the environmental, what they think the benefits would be, which I disagree with. But, and it's almost like they're saying, hey, we'd be willing to throw poor people to the wolves as long as you were going to absolutely outright ban natural gas. But since they took out the provisions that were an outright ban, now this progressive group is like, we're getting a wishy-washy commitment to ban natural gas. And at the same time, poor people are going to be hurt quite a bit. So now we just can't. We can't even be neutral on this thing. We're just opposed to it, which I find funny in a lot of ways because Republicans have been saying this exact stuff. Republicans have said this is just going to pad the pockets of the shareholders at PSC, which is a foreign-owned company, by the way. And they've been saying this is going to hurt poor people. Poor people can't afford this on top of all the other taxes that you've burdened them with. So like Republicans say it, meh, just ignore the minority party. They're just totally irrelevant. Well, a progressive entity that is looking out for the interests of communities of color and of impoverished communities and what they characterize as underserved communities, all the trigger words that Dems love, now they're saying they're opposed to it. So I would ask Washington State Democrats, what are you going to do? Let me check quick because I put a text out to see if we have a timeline. I have no timeline update. Keep emailing elected leaders. And there is time for Democrats who, there's a couple groups of Democrats I think we can get to here. The ones who actually care about good governance and are embarrassed that they shoved through a bill that the lieutenant governor called a hot mess. and a bill that still is not written lawfully, so it could easily be overturned in a lawsuit. And then there's the Democrats, who I actually do believe care about the poor, and who, if they want to walk the walk, and they see this email from the Washington State Community Action Partnership saying, hey, this is going to hurt the poor in disadvantaged communities, that maybe those Democrats ought to reconsider what their priorities truly are. Okay, I want to get in the fight on something that I think we've been pretty quiet on, and it's not for lack of interest. I think it's just because the session is going on. There's so much stuff happening right now. But as the session ends at the end of this week, and as we enter what will be a very busy, very contentious election season in 2024, this is our fight. So we're going to pick this fight up now wherever others have begun. I'm going to give others a lot of credit for pointing out some of the concerns with this. And then we're going to do our best to get answers from the Secretary of State's office and to stop this program. So by now, you've probably heard about something called Logically AI. So the Secretary of State's office, under moderate Democrat Steve Hobbs, they did a no-bid contract with a company called Logically AI. And the idea is that they're going to use AI to monitor social media for any threats to our elections. This first got attention last year. And in fact, the Washington State Republican Party, this is an article from December from the Center Square, WGOP files ethics complaint against Secretary of State Hobbs over social media monitoring, because they really felt as if, and I tend to agree with them, that you have this no-bid contract with an outside entity that taxpayers are paying to be monitored on social media by this AI firm for what the government is going to deem as election threats. So it really feels like a bridge too far. And then that kind of happened, and there's been on social media some slow trickles of, because what happens is Logically AI scans the internet. I think that's what sound of AI robot would make. I don't know. And then it comes back and it puts together a report, and it says to the Secretary of State, here's what we found, and here's why it could be a problem. So it captures some of the social media posts, and then it explains the problem with the social media post, the narrative, or the potential real threat that it poses to elections or to elections workers or elections officials. The issue is, and there was actually a story out this week, again, from our friends at the Center Square. The issue is, and it has been since this began, Logically AI is flagging an awful lot of truthful information and legitimate sharing of news stories and things that should be a concern to everyone. And it's being flagged as potentially problematic. For instance, this from the Center Square this week, Secretary of State's misinformation program flags factual stories on non-citizens voting. And in that article, it's referring to our friend Ari Hoffman. We have a lot of friends who've been scooped up by Logically AI. You know what? I think we keep good company. I'll explain in a moment how I have also been flagged numerous times by this Logically AI program. So this, all the screenshots that I'm going to show you if you're watching the show are from these Logically AI reports that are given to the Secretary of State's office. So the problem posts that Center Square article points out Logically AI flagged. One of them was from our friend Ari Hoffman, but again, about a factual instance of foreign nationals who avoided prosecution after illegally voting 28 times in Washington state. So what Logically AI calls that is a narrative. So they find these narratives on social media and they flag them. It says narrative 4, foreign nationals voting in Clark County, Washington without legal consequences is evidence of widespread voter fraud. Now, what's interesting about this is I don't think Ari Hoffman ever suggested that this is evidence of widespread voter fraud. What he reported on is a factual incident, and he reported on it in the Post-Millennial, of foreign nationals who voted illegally 28 times in Clark County, Washington, and who were never prosecuted for it. Now, to me, that has the potential to erode confidence in our elections. The fact that you have a factual event that happened of election fraud that did not result in prosecution. So that feeds into, yes, a narrative that could be dangerous or detrimental for trust in our elections, but a narrative that is true. So here you got AI and it's like Ari Hoffman's the problem, when no, the problem is not prosecuting people who are actually committing voter fraud. Because when you don't prosecute people who are actually committing voter fraud, you're going to lead people to believe that voter fraud doesn't matter and to rightfully question how many other instances of voter fraud have gone unprosecuted. So let me show you a couple of the other things that have been flagged by Logically AI. My friend Jonathan Cho and I. So you remember over the summer when we were collecting signatures for Referendum 101, which would have reversed Senate Bill 5599, which basically said that your kids can run away from home and hide in a shelter and the government will keep their location from you. So as we were out doing that, there was a concerted effort from local Democratic parties where the signature gathering efforts were happening to harass lawful signature gatherers. So Jonathan Cho and I, this is back in July, I believe, we had both tweeted about this. Jonathan actually tweeted out a video. He said, far left intimidation as volunteers across Washington make a final push to mobilize and collect signatures to overturn Senate Bill 5599. Volunteers say militant activists, including members of the Black Panther Party, showed up to a Lakewood Summerfest and tried to prevent people from signing. And he's got a video of what was clear harassment, which in some cases, I believe, actually violated the law. They also included a tweet from me where I said it's in the interest of protecting the democratic process, the Secretary of State should investigate coordinated efforts from state and local Democratic Party leaders to disrupt lawful signature gathering efforts. And someone retweeted me and says, I doubt they'd investigate. So Logically AI captures those two things. And then they put out an election alert to the Secretary of State's office, and they called again. This is an emerging narrative. They said, the emerging narrative, local activists and leaders interfered with voters attempting to sign a referendum petition. So it has a description of, you know, what Jonathan and I said, et cetera. And then it talks about the dissemination, how many times this was shared, what kind of engagement it got. And then it says what the impact could be. Listen to this. This narrative could degrade confidence in Washington State's referendum process among those who believe that Steve Hobbs will not investigate and prosecute political party representatives intimidating signature gatherers for Referendum 101. This narrative could motivate individuals to provide private security for signature gatherers, potentially leading to clashes with protesters. Like that would be a bad thing? This is crazy. This narrative could generate a high volume of requests to the Secretary of State's office from those that believe activists and local leaders from a state political party interfered with signature gathering efforts for Washington Referendum 101. First of all, I don't get why any of that would be a problem. If you have, they're attacking the people who are telling you what's happening versus going after the people who are committing the behavior. So here you have me, Jonathan Cho. They also had that, it was a tweet from our friend Andy Stevens. He said, the WA Democrats recently organized a campaign of illegal intimidation and harassment of signature gatherers for referendums. AGO WA won't do his job, but there's still a chance for Steve Hobbs to do his sworn duty and investigate. So for me, what we should be concerned with is the fact that there was no investigation. The fact that these Democrats and these alt-left groups totally got away over the summer with harassing lawful signature gatherers. No consequences at all. That should be the concern. That should be the thing that is going to erode confidence in elections. Not us pointing it out. And for Logically AI to say the impacts could be it degrades confidence in Washington State's referendum process among those who believe that Steve Hobbs will not investigate and prosecute political... Look, it's not his job to prosecute, by the way. But he didn't even speak out about it. So yeah, the narrative could do that because it should do that. It should erode confidence in the referendum process when the Secretary of State and has no issue, apparently, with Democrats and Democratic parties staging organized harassment of signature gatherers. And then the motivate individuals to provide private security for signature gatherers, potentially leading to clash with protesters. So wait. It's a bad thing if we hire private security to protect ourselves from the mob that's already harassing us when we're trying to collect lawful signatures. That's what you're concerned about, is us hiring security, not the people who we need to hire security because of? This is crazy stuff. And then that last third one, it said generate a high volume. Generate a high volume of requests to the Secretary of State's office from those who believe activists and local leaders from a state political party interfered with signature gathering efforts. People should email the Secretary of State's office. He should get a high volume of emails because he wasn't saying anything about it. That's not something for a no-bid AI contract to look into or to flag as, this could be a problem. Hey, Steve Hobbs, you might be getting a bunch of emails because of this. That could be problematic. This is crazy stuff. So now to, I think, the piece de resistance of why this logically AI program needs to fold. Remember the school superintendent in Kitsap who just, you know, got a sweet plea deal to avoid jail time because she was caught on video stealing political yard signs for a no on a school bond effort. Remember how I've covered that factually? You know, we showed the video, talked about the case, her arrest, all the evidence. Well, apparently I'm the problem, according to Logically AI. I'm the problem for pointing out something that factually happened and that she actually was in a courtroom for. It says, emerging narrative, a Kitsap County School District superintendent committed election interference by stealing campaign signs. Users online claimed that the North Kitsap School District superintendent committed election interference by allegedly stealing signs that oppose a bond measure on the February special election ballot. Users implied that this incident obstructs political campaign procedures and could influence how voters cast their ballots regarding the bond measure. One user also claimed that the school board approved of election interference by placing the superintendent on paid leave instead of unpaid leave. And then it says what the impact could be. The impact of this narrative could degrade voters' confidence in the integrity of elections, thereby degrading confidence in the outcome of elections. Yeah, but it's not my narrative or people pointing that out that could degrade confidence in elections. It is the act of a school superintendent yanking political yard signs she disagrees with out of the freaking ground and hucking them into the woods that is understandably going to degrade confidence in elections, especially when she goes on to get a slap on the wrist and has to pay $363 in restitution. And yes, pulling those signs out of the ground could impact the election. You never know how many people could have seen them and researched and had a sign that helped them decide how to vote. And the idea that, again, you're gathering all this, taxpayer funded. We're paying the government to monitor our social media in and of itself. And look, I understand we're monitored. I understand I got my freaking iPhone and that if I don't want to be monitored by the government, I have to get rid of my electronic devices. I get it. There's a far cry from, you know, Big Brother up there monitoring what I do and where I go, and taxpayers funding a no-bid contract through the Secretary of State's office to look out for threats to the election, only to see that they are flagging things that are the opposite of threats to the election, that are factual information, that are pointing out actual threats to the elections, things that could actually erode voter confidence in elections. And it's us getting scooped up by a Logically AI, and it's not the Secretary of State's office saying, hey, oh my gosh, look at this, a school superintendent stealing yard signs? That could degrade confidence in elections. Oh my God, look at this, 28 illegals voted in Clark County, Washington, and they weren't prosecuted? That could degrade confidence in elections. Or, oh my gosh, the state Democratic Party is running a snitch line to go after lawful signature gatherers? That could degrade confidence in elections. Oh my gosh, local party officials and alt-left rioters are harassing lawful signature gatherers. That could erode confidence in our elections. Instead, it's like we're being flagged for bringing all that stuff to their attention, which instead of being flagged by Logically AI, we should get a freaking medal from the Secretary of State's office for helping him keep track of all the things that are degrading confidence in our election and that are leading a lot of Republicans. And because of all this, I think rightfully so, to really question election integrity. I have said all along, I'm not a believer in the 2020 stolen election bullshit. I'm not. Oh, sorry. Bull crap. But this kind of stuff doesn't help. You want Republicans to have confidence in the election? And you don't do anything about all the stuff I just laid out? You don't speak out about it? And you have your AI buddies flagging us telling other people about it? You've got instances of people voting illegally and they're not prosecuted. You've got a school superintendent who should be an example to her community yanking yard signs out of the ground and gets a slap on the wrist. Those are the things that rightfully are hurting confidence in our elections. And those are the things you ought to be concerned about, not monitoring our social media. So Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, I think he's a reasonable Democrat. He needs to do something about it. This will be a fight that we are going to join, many others who've already started it, from now until Election Day if we must. The Logically AI program needs to fold. Whatever your intent of it was, Secretary Hobbs, I get it. I get that there are actual issues, you know, foreign governments and foreign powers who are trying to influence our election. We already have programs in place through the Washington State National Guard and federally to try to monitor some of that stuff. But you don't need, whatever your intention is, again, this can't be it. This cannot be it. So I would much rather you spend that money on doing other things to actually improve public confidence in our elections. And step number one is ending the Logically AI contract. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about the big day in Olympia yesterday. These initiatives were being passed on the floor of the Senate and the House while we were on the air. And so I just wanted to go back and play some of what transpired because it was a really, really huge moment for the state of Washington. And I think, honestly, historic. First, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. Oh, Nicole, we got a great email on this yesterday. This is from Jamie. You can't afford to wait to change once and for all. You can't believe how great you're going to feel. As a 70-hour a week CDL driver, gone 5 days and four nights, I know the excuses why I couldn't outweigh my could. And I did 60-plus days. It's now a habit. I made it work. It's how I roll now. Started at 314 pounds. I'm down 54 pounds. The rewards are endless. Oh my gosh, I love that. Yes, yay. You know, I talk about how I've lost almost 40 pounds now on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. And I know that sounds like a lot because I lost most of it in 2 months, but that's not even atypical results. I hear from people all the time who've lost 28 pounds, 30 pounds, et cetera. It's not magic, not by a long shot. You do have to commit to it to get those kinds of results. But if you do well with structure, et cetera, just like, here's what you got to do, do it for 60 days. This is a program that's really going to work for you. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by scheduling your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can ask them any questions you have. I'd also note that you can do the entire program virtually. You never have to go into their office in Kirkland at all. Okay, so huge day in Olympia yesterday. That really cannot be understated. Three of the Let's Go Washington initiatives, no income tax, parental rights, and restoring reasonable police pursuits, they passed in the House and Senate. And in case you're curious, the governor cannot veto them. The governor has no ability to veto these initiatives, so they will become law. Here are the moments that this happened.
Having received a constitutional majority, Senate Initiative 2111 is declared passed.
Having received a constitutional majority, House Initiative 2111 is declared passed.
Having received a constitutional majority, Senate Initiative 2081 is declared passed.
Having received a constitutional majority, House Initiative 2081 is declared passed.
Having received a constitutional majority, Senate Initiative 2113 is declared passed.
Having received a constitutional majority, House Initiative 2113 is declared passed.
Yeah, love it. You know, and I talked on the show yesterday about how so much fighting went into all of that, especially on police pursuits. Man, you know, even last session, so much fighting to try to get it improved even a little bit. So what's going to happen now with police pursuits is it's going to go from this short list of crimes that they can pursue if they've got probable cause for to officers can use their discretion to pursue if it's in line with their own agency's rules and regulations to pursue anyone suspected of committing a crime. And so to me, I mean, that's what we got to do. You know, car theft, for instance, is a big one that law enforcement agencies had complained about. And one of the overarching things that I think we all have to remember here is that this is about just giving power back to local police departments to make these choices. You might have some local police departments who decide that they want to stick with, you know, the law that was passed in 2021 and that they have a very restrictive police pursuit policy that works for their city like Seattle. And that's fine. I have no issue with that. If a police department decides on its own because of the factors in their city or whatever it is, here's what our police pursuit policy is going to be and it works for us. But you can't tell me that Seattle Police Department's police pursuit policy is going to be the same as, you know, some agency in the Tri-Cities. So this gives power back to local police departments. I wanted to play this clip from our friend, Senator Monica Dingra. chair of Law and Justice, who, as you know, last session was spreading all sorts of misinformation about police pursuits. She was using faulty data, data that was proven to be faulty that she never clarified. She's now running for attorney general. And she did let this out of committee, which, you know, I suppose she didn't have to do that. But she said on the floor that she could not support it.
I personally will be voting no on the initiative to respect the work that the law enforcement agencies in my district have done. They have always had a more restrictive pursuit policy that is consistent with best practices and the recommendations from the Bureau of Justice, and that was their policy even before state law was changed.
Yeah, but here's the thing. She's almost making the argument for the initiative. She says, I'm not going to vote for it because I respect the work that my local police department has done. Okay, but you don't respect what other police departments are doing and what their needs are going to be. This isn't about changing what your police department can and cannot do, as you know. The initiative does not change. Maybe she's talking about Redmond PD. The initiative does not change what your police department's policy is going to be. And that's fine. But what you want to do is thrust your city's policy onto police departments across the entire state. And so it's very interesting to have her almost give an argument that is justification for the initiative in the first place. All right. On the parental rights vote, I want to first show you in the Senate, it passed unanimously. The initiative 2081 on parental rights and improving notification for parents in schools and you know, when they have medical issues, et cetera, unanimously in the Senate. Now, I saw that and I couldn't help but to be a little, like, I'm happy, right? I'm glad it passed in the Senate. But I was also thoroughly annoyed because I just thought back to, you know, the debate over 5599 last session and how they just vilified parents left and right. It was like, oh, and I know that didn't have to do with parental rights and education, but 5599 was like, oh, you don't even have to be abusing your child or neglecting your child, but we want to give that kid the power to run away from home and we'll hide them as the state of Washington because we just don't trust that parents can be good parents to LGBTQ youth. And so, you know, they spent the better part of the last year and a half, 2 years just vilifying parents and putting policies and laws into place that assumed the worst in parents. And then they come and this initiative is before them and they're going to have to be on the record deciding whether we want parental rights or not. And they're all like, yay, like, screw you. I'm sorry. But, you know, the vilification we got for referendum 101 and being called anti-trans and all this stuff. So it's a little, it's very disingenuous. They obviously know that parents are not a voting base that they should be going on the record against. I would also say Representative Lillian Ortiz Self. So while these were all being voted on, of course, there were some speeches on the floor. This is what, let me just play it and I'll talk about it on the back end. Democratic State Representative Lillian Ortiz Self.
Mr. Speaker, I met in my with my constituents with six trans students who, Mr. Speaker, when this initiative came out, were scared. They're scared because they continue to be harassed and schools do not seem safe for them. Mr. Speaker, I don't know how to answer their question when they look at me and say, why do some hate us so much? Mr. Speaker, we all need to answer that question because our students deserve to feel safe at school. And I want you to join me, Mr. Speaker, in making sure that if any discriminatory practices show up in any of our schools, that we're going to stand up and we're going to make sure that we stop it and we protect every single student in our schools.
What are you talking about? Genuinely, what are you talking about? This parental rights initiative has nothing to do with trans youth. And she says in there, you know, this, I'm sure, fictitious conversation that she had with six trans youth that, oh, why, that told her, why do people hate us so much? We've got schools where there's trans flags hanging in classrooms year round. This is not a school system where trans youth are, and look, there could be some, but by and large, probably one of the most accepting school systems in the country when it comes to active support of LGBTQ youth. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about parental rights. We're talking about the right of a parent to know if their kid shows up at school and their teacher uses a completely different name and gender for them. Or if their child goes to a counselor at school and they're deeply depressed and suicidal. This is about making sure that that important information about what's happening with their kids is known by parents who love them and who support them. And I've said all along, if you've got parents who are abusing kids, for instance, there's laws for that. But we're not talking about that here. We're talking about hiding important information about what's the mental and social and physical well-being of kids from parents. We've done many stories on the show of policies at the state level and OSPI that basically say teachers have to keep these secrets from parents. Oh, if the kid is coming to school and using a different name and gender, the teachers can know. The fellow students could know. Hell, the parents of the fellow students can know, but you've got to keep that secret from the parents. Because again, the policies and the procedures assume the worst intention of parents. Parents can't possibly respect their LGBTQ youth like teachers can. So that whole statement, it was like, what are you even talking about? Of course, if you have discriminatory practices in public schools, especially in Washington's public school system, of course those are going to be dealt with. Keeping parents in the loop has nothing in the freaking world to do with that. One more vote count I wanted to show you on the initiative 2111, no state income tax. So this is the vote count in the Senate. If you're watching the show, green is a yes, red is a no. So we had on the Democratic side, 10 no votes. Now remember, when they were debating this initiative 2111, which basically puts a flag in the ground and says, hey, we are codifying into statute that this state does not have an income tax. No matter how you dress it up, we don't want an income tax. And Democrats, their chief argument was, oh, we don't even need that. We don't need that. It says in the state constitution we can't have a graduated income tax. So I don't know what you're trying to do here, but we don't want an income tax. This is redundant. Clearly it's not redundant. Because what those 10 no votes tell me is something that they've admitted all along, is that they, what are you saying?
There's 11.
11? Oh.
Yeah, it actually says it in the corner there.
Nicole's over there. Like,
sorry.
I'm like, what? What is this? What are you giving me ones in? 11. Where does it say it?
Right there in the green little box.
Oh, okay. 11 no votes. I guess that's worth stopping the whole segment over. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, I'm just trying to give you a little signal.
Thank you. That didn't make any sense.
It didn't make.
What that tells me is that they know that this would make it more difficult to implement an income tax. And they've always wanted an income tax. I mean, Democrats have up until now been honest about that yeah, they think we have a regressive tax system and the way to fix that is an income tax, which I believe is why they're making taxes such a disaster and just piling things on. So Washingtonians are like, I give up, just give me an income tax and get rid of all these other things. So for them to be like, oh, don't worry about it, you don't need this protection, added protection, we've got the Constitution. No, clearly we need it, because at least 11 were willing to admit and acknowledge on the record that, hey, I don't want this codified into state law because that makes it more difficult for us to do what we were planning to do all along. All right, and just as a reminder, we'll give you a little break, a respite from initiatives, but we can't let the momentum die down because the real fight starts now, and that is for the other three initiatives that Democrats were not willing to take up and that are going to be on the November ballot. And these have huge implications on your lives and your pocketbook. So just a reminder of the three that did not get hearings that will be heading toward the ballot in November. Initiative 2117, which will get rid of that hidden gas tax brought about by the Climate Commitment Act. That's the one I care about the most. Initiative 2109, which would repeal the capital gains tax, which kills our business environment, and it's illegal. It is an unconstitutional income tax. And then Initiative 2124, which would allow you to opt out of the state's long-term care program, which you've been paying into, unless you had private long-term care insurance before it went into effect, you've been paying into that since July of 2023. Now, as I said, I've told you before, this is going to get expensive. This is going to get vicious. This is going to get very untruthful. It already is. And so in addition to all the critical races that we have going on leading up to November 2024, you're going to start to see a lot of ads out about these. You're going to start to see a lot of attack ads. There's already a ton of spending on the union side. And frankly, Democrats and progressives have much more money in the state, a bigger war chest. So if you'd like to help push back against some of the lies, we're going to do what we can with our platform. You can always contribute at letsgowa.com, letsgowa.com. I know that they're taking donations to try to help fund their own war chest to push back against some of this. But I want to show you this email. This is interesting. As if we ever wondered who is actually calling the shots on the Democratic side of the aisle in Washington state, it's the unions. you know, it's the WEA, the Washington Education Association. It is SEIU, which represents home care, healthcare workers. And SEIU, they would be devastated if the long-term care program was made optional, because they're getting a ton of money from that thing. And so there's an internal email that was sent to Democratic state lawmakers and their staff last week that was sent to me. And it basically shows that SEIU is the one dictating Democratic talking points on this. It says, "Dear legislators and staff, please find the attached updated messaging guidance for Initiative 2124, the initiative that will take away Washington's long-term care benefit program." And it goes on, it has all these messaging notes. It says, "Don't," underlined, "don't use terms like opt-out, choice, or voluntary," which is so funny because the whole initiative is about giving you the choice, letting you opt in. Mm-hmm. It says, "Describing Initiative 2124, instead of using those words, describe Initiative 2124 as bankrupting Washington's long-term care benefits fund, taking away critical benefits for 3.5 million working Washingtonians, many of whom don't want them." Many of whom don't want them. And you're going to bankrupt a fund that just began. So it's already showing you how SEIU is telling Democrats, do not say this, something that's factual. Do say this, something that is totally misleading. So SEIU is going to be calling the shots. They're going to be spending a lot of money on it. I promise you, the Democratic talking points will look exactly like the talking points that are sent to them on that from SEIU. And you just have to remember that, you know, first of all, there's a lot of reasons why the long-term care program is a disaster. But if you've been in the state for long enough, you know that there was this short window of time where you could go out, find your own private long-term care insurance to avoid paying into the long-term care program for life. Many people weren't able to do that. And so you're stuck paying into a program that you might never benefit from. And that's going to give you very little benefit in the long term. And so it's really just to pad the pockets of SEIU in case this leaves any question in the world. So it's important to know what the lies are going to be, to combat those lies in any way we can with our show, with your social media posts, talking to friends, talking to family members. And then, of course, there's going to be a lot of burden on Let's Go WAH and other individuals to try to fund the counteroffensive on all of this. All right, we're going to head into our segment, Unbelievable, an event that was promised to be nonpartisan, was obviously not nonpartisan. We're going to get into the details of that. First, I've been encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Mike and I have been members of the First Mark family for about a year, and it has completely simplified our entire insurance experience. I mean, last year we had to, you know, bring our household together when we got married, but before that we just had, you know, policies we were managing on our own for car, for his home insurance, you know, for my renter's insurance before I moved in with him. It was just this patchwork. We had to keep up with it on our own. We had to shop for rates on our own until we moved over to the First Mark family and took the First Mark Challenge. Here's Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now, because it's complicated.
Yeah, and First Mark Insurance is a local company that's been doing this for a long time. And so what you do with the First Mark Challenge is you gather up what you've got for your current insurance. You schedule some time with them. Mike and I did it over Zoom. You go over your current insurance and you talk about your needs. Maybe you are paying for insurance you don't need. Maybe you need more insurance and better coverage. Maybe you need to save a little bit of money. They're going to take that information. They're going to go out for free. They're going to shop the market for you. They're going to come back and they're going to say, hey, here's what we think you ought to do. Or they might even tell you your insurance is just fine. You don't need us. But either way, First Mark Insurance, you never going to have to pay them a dime. And I promise they're going to take so much of the burden off your plate of choosing insurance, then keeping up with insurance, making sure you have the insurance you need and that it is within your budget. So firstmarkinsurance.com, the very best part is they work for you. All right, Seattle colleges invited students to an event that they promised would be nonpartisan. Turns out it was just another hate Donald Trumpathon. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So there was an online event hosted by the lead professor of political science at Seattle Central, Carl Livingston.
And let's show the flyer for the event. It says, could this presidential election mean the end of U.S. democracy? You are invited to a momentous Zoom event. The Seattle Colleges Committee to Save Our Democracy will present nonpartisan, scholarly info on the threat to our democracy and what we can do about it. Oh, well, that sounds nice. What kind of threats to the democracy are you talking about? I don't know. States trying to keep Donald Trump off the ballot, even though he wasn't convicted of insurrection. Like, what? I mean, yeah, sure, January 6th. I mean, let's talk about all the threats that exist to our democracy, since you say this is going to be a nonpartisan event. Let's see here. Nicole did us the Lord's work of going through this video, so I did not have to. Let's hear a little bit of what Carl Livingston had to say.
It's his CEO style and his love of authoritarianism and authoritarians. So he just admired Kim Jong-un and wanted to have a parade like his. He felt a president can do whatever he wants to do. He would love to run it like run the country like he ran his companies, where he flouted the rules and he wanted to make money and he wanted to stay at the top. And also he wanted to be seen as great. And things flow from his idiosyncratic way of being. And it's just Trump. Donald Trump and those who ascribe to Trumpism are a clear and present danger to the Constitution and the Republic. I determined that I got to do something, that if that in the short span of 11 months from now, I could be arrested protesting that the House of Representatives gave Donald Trump the presidency after they challenged mainly black and brown precincts, majority precinct votes. Hopefully you see this is nonpartisan. There are conservatives and Republicans also concerned, just like Democrats and what we call liberals or progressives, about the threat to our Constitution and democracy. That's what this is about. You know, this is a time in which you have to stand up. Part of Trumpism is to support really Putin over and what he's doing over Ukraine and to support Putin and what he wants to do and kind of look the other way
for much longer.
And so these are things to be concerned about.
Totally nonpartisan. I see what the flyer said. I think they're confusing the word nonpartisan for bipartisan. So it is true that there is some bipartisan, there is a bipartisan belief among some that Donald Trump poses a threat to our democracy. I mean, they had a little slide up of the Lincoln Project, which I have my issues with the Lincoln Project, which is essentially former Republicans who have come out or current Republicans who have come out against Donald Trump. So it is true that there is some bipartisan concern in what Donald Trump could mean for our democracy. But that isn't nonpartisan. Nonpartisan would mean that you're not, you know, representing the interests of one particular political party. And what this promised was that it was going to give a nonpartisan scholarly info on the threat to our democracy. Did any of that sound like nonpartisan scholarly info? And it just shows, again, like we can have agree to disagree on Donald Trump, but if it was going to be a Donald Trump hate fest, don't advertise it to students as this is a completely unbiased, nonpartisan information that we're going to allow, you know, give you so you can make your own decision on how you might feel about Donald Trump. Here's another montage. God, how long is this one, Nicole? I don't think I can do it. Oh, thank God, of other speakers also about their dislike for Donald Trump.
We take for granted our ability to dissent. And now with the death of Navalny, I think more and more people are realizing how precious that is and that we could lose that. Of what does it mean when a leader who's somebody who's running for office in the US wants to model themselves after Putin?
This idea of Trumpism. So in essence, just like a particular brand of populism, uniquely connected to his like celebrity identity and kind of a weakening of the Republican Party structure because of that.
And I'm Patty Gorman, the service learning coordinator at Seattle Central, and my alter ego is Miss Liberty. Please look out next quarter for an announcement asking you to adjust an assignment in ways that allow students to meet course requirements while also recognizing the threats to our democracy in this 2024 election. Picture an agenda next quarter that is student-led, an agenda of various students presenting their take on the importance of our democratic constitution and the need for us to vigilantly protect it against threats.
Yeah, I'm sure those students would be allowed to say that they think Democrats also pose a threat to our democracy in trying to remove Trump from the ballot. I'm sure that those papers would go over real well. But it just shows you, I mean, there's no room in our higher education systems in this state for free thought, for dissent, for people who are independent-minded. And it is a constant barrage of trying to shape in your image the minds of young people, which is the opposite of what we should be doing in higher education. We need to be teaching these people and these young people to think for themselves, to think critically and independently and based on facts, not based on what the lady wearing the Statue of Liberty hat has to say. So it's just, you look, I'm not, it's not a surprise to me that Seattle colleges would have a Trump bashing Zoom meeting.
Best.
What Trump bash fest. What is continues to be disappointing at for me is that it's labeled nonpartisan. It's labeled as, you know, oh, this isn't biased. This isn't someone's opinion, when it very clearly is. Man, I wish you could homeschool your kids for college, too. I don't know if that's particularly an option. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, we always have Zach Abraham on the show on Thursdays to give his sage economic advice. But this past Thursday, I gave him advice of my own on how you can really tell whether the economy is in a good place, because Biden says it is. And I think proof of that is the fact that the CEO of Kellogg is on the news saying that Americans should just eat cereal for dinner if they can't afford it.
I think it's a product of goal seeking for data, meaning the Federal Reserve has been adjusting down inflationary metrics for 40 years, some of it for good reason, some of it not. But now I think you're in a position where, much like the unemployment rate, when you understand how the unemployment rate is calculated, if the unemployment rate doesn't stay changed, so if no new workers come into the system and no new workers leave the system for a long enough time, the unemployment rate will go to zero, even though nothing has changed, right? I think they've kind of done the same thing with inflation, where it's not completely bogus, but it's not telling you the story that they're saying it is.
Yeah, and bottom line, they're using the numbers, they're cherry-picking numbers to tell the tale that they want to tell, especially in an election year. You cannot, as the president, say the economy is doing well when the CEO of Kellogg is on CNBC saying people can't afford dinners, so they should just feed their kids a bowl of cereal. That does not compute. So anyway, all of this to say that with everything going on in 2024, you know, the real unpredictability, some of the lies being pushed out there, it's really important to know that your retirement is protected, because there's a lot of volatility in the market. Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital, this is what they specialize in, managing your risk. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team at Bulwark. He also hosts the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Their review is just a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. So schedule your free risk review now, no obligation, at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, I saw a comment on the live stream. I have to comment on now. This stuff bothers the hell out of me. Bunky says, you're complicit, Brandy, when you cast stones at Donald J. Trump for no good reason. No, you sound like Lauren Culp, you know, angry that I don't support Semi Bird. You should have no issue. This is especially bothersome to me when it's conservatives, because you want to attack the left for being so close-minded, having purity tests, not letting anyone think independently. I don't like Donald Trump. I have every right in the world not to like the guy. I have every right in the world to say I would prefer a different candidate who isn't going to be so destructive to down-ballot Republicans. I have every right in the world to say January 6th was a national embarrassment, that I don't like the way that Trump treats people and speaks to people. I think he was pretty good for the economy, et cetera. I think he'd be better for border security. There are some things I liked about his policies. I have every right in the world to want to choose a president also based on personality. So it's not fair for me to say, especially as fair as I've freaking been when it comes to, you know, the attacks on Donald Trump that have been unhinged, like efforts to keep him off the ballot, to suggest that I'm complicit because I just don't prefer the guy. That's ridiculous. To compare me to people, being complicit in people who want to remove him from the ballot to protect voters or to protect democracy, that's the kind of shit that just bothers me. Because it's like, that's not... That's liberal behavior. That's a liberal mindset. That's how liberals act and treat people. And to me, that's no better. So sorry. I know you're watching the show. I appreciate you watching the show. But that kind of stuff just bothers the hell out of me. And now I've sworn twice on the show today. Son of a. Okay, let's get outside of Washington State, talk about some national news. The Department of Veterans Affairs. This is interesting because we really don't know what happened behind the scenes here. But what we do know is that a memo was sent out by the Department of Veteran Affairs saying that at VA facilities across the country, a famous photo of a sailor kissing a nurse, it is in Times Square, right? The famous photo was?
Yes.
Yeah. In Times Square, that it would have to be taken down. If it's in a VA facility across the country, it says, purpose, this memorandum requests the removal of the VJ Day in Times Square photograph from all Veterans Health Administration facilities, in alignment with the Department of Veterans Affairs' commitment to maintaining a safe, respectful, and trauma-informed environment. This action is promoted by the recognition that the photograph, which depicts a non-consensual act, is inconsistent with the VA's no-tolerance policy towards sexual harassment and assault. I shouldn't laugh. As outlined in the VA handbook. Let's see. It should be removed from all VHA facilities. This action reflects our dedication to creating a respectful and safe workplace and is in keeping with our broader efforts to promote a culture of inclusivity and awareness. Signed, Rima Ann O'Nelson, Assistant Undersecretary for Health Operations. You have to be kidding me. Like, look, I actually didn't know that that was a non-consensual kiss. Maybe he just grabbed her and, you know, laid one on. But it is one of the most famous photographs from history. It's not some, like, overt, like, it's not, I'm not even going to say it. It's not depicting some, like, violent right. sex act. Like, they're leading it to believe here. And so what's interesting is this comes out. And it gets all over social media. And now the director of the Veterans, the Department of Veterans Affairs, the secretary of the Department of Veteran Affairs, is saying, we're not doing that. He says, let me be clear. This image is not banned from VA facilities, and we will keep it in VA facilities. Although he's not denying that that memorandum went out. So I tend to think that this was this undersecretary who maybe had a few people complain to her or him. And was like, okay, let's take this thing down because it shows a non-consensual kiss. And then once it went crazy, I tend to think this is probably not something the Secretary of Veteran Affairs was asked his opinion on before it went out. So maybe that's what he's saying is, now that I know about it, no, we're not going to do that. And I tend to think that it probably wouldn't have been taken down in a lot of locations.
No, I'm guessing not.
Because you have a lot of veterans who work for the Department of Veteran Affairs who would have been like, I'm not taking that freaking photo down. Like, the secretary himself can come take it down if right. he wants me to take it down.
And you know what? We're evolving humans.
Exactly.
So we're it's okay to keep a beings. Historical photo and say, hey, don't kiss random strangers when you get home from right. war anymore. That's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. yeah, don't grab and
don't
kiss
do
people.
Them.
Right, 100%.
Don't do that.
I mean, unless you're smoking hot, then I mean... I'm just kidding. Don't cancel me. Okay, let me see here. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez getting a little taste of her own medicine, which typically, I've said this before, I do not like, whether it's Democrat or Republican, harassing politicians on their free time. I think it's in poor taste. I've said that when you have politicians being confronted at restaurants, etc. I believe that it should be beneath us as Americans that, hey, you can disagree with someone's politics. I remember when, what was the senator from Arizona, Kirsten Sinema, was like followed into the bathroom and harassed. It's just not okay. That being said, AOC is getting a taste of her own medicine because she's condoned that kind of behavior when it happens to Republicans. And she was leaving a movie with her significant other. And what I think is interesting is her, of all people, you know, as kind of pro-Hamas as she's been, she was being yelled down by Hamas sympathizers.
You haven't been calling it a genocide. Don't tell me I'm lying. Then just say it's a genocide. Just say it. Over 30,000 people are dead, AOC. You can't just say it for once. Just say the word. That's it. That's all we want you to say. Or you're not angry about people.
Stop.
We're not doing anything. We're just talking to an elected politician. That's all we're doing. That's it.
You're gonna cut it, and you're going to cut this, and you're going to clip this so that it's completely out of context. I already said that it was, and y'all are just going to pretend that it wasn't over and over again. It's up, man. If you're not helping these people,
TV.
And you're not helping them.
You refuse to.
You're not helping them.
Yeah, so they wanted her to say that what's happening in Gaza is a genocide, which this is one of the most outspoken members of Congress when it comes to having a ceasefire in Gaza. And so why they choose to follow her around and harass her while at a movie, again, I'm not in support of it. However, this is an old tweet from AOC saying the whole point of protesting is to make people uncomfortable. Activists take that discomfort with the status quo and advocate for concrete policy changes. Popular support often starts small and grows. To folks who complain, protest demands make others uncomfortable. That's the point. Okay, well, you cannot blame them or be mad at them, AOC, for using your playbook against you, because they use your playbook against other people. So if you don't like it, if you didn't like it, maybe you need to change your tone and change what you have encouraged in the past. All right, we're going to get to some questions and comments, also our daily show poll momentarily. First, our friend Wes Jones at Southwest.com, as we await the Fed dropping interest rates, he's been advising people who are considering selling their home this year to get an early start. There's a lot of stuff you have to do before your home can hit the market. And so if you get in touch with him, SellWithWes.com, he says they can get started on doing that assessment right away. And then when the time comes, he'll come check your house out.
I'll come out, it'll be me personally, and I'll come out, you know, kind of go through what our process is, assess your situation, and then, you know, at that point, if we're going to be working together, then, you know, we'll bring in the staging, I'll get it pre-inspected, and then we will do any of the repairs, any of the upgrades, and like, you know, when we start doing those types of activities, like, the more time, the better, you know, just so it's a little less stressful.
Yeah, and so he's going to start with go to SellWithWes.com. I mean, check out a few real estate agents, but I really think you're going to find that the services that Wes Jones offers are really unique and exceptional. So first, he's going to give you a free market analysis so he can tell you what you can expect, get your expectations in the right place depending on where your home is at. And then he can talk to you about their Listing Boost concierge service in case you need some cosmetic updates to your home. I mean, they can handle all of that for you and take the stress off you. But you can start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. So SellWithWes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to questions and comments. But before we do that, our daily subscriber show poll, I asked you about the Police Pursuit Initiative because this is a big deal. I mean, it is a significant change to what the past law was for police pursuits. And, you know, I think there's a lot of hope that this will improve public safety. So I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals and X, an initiative passed into law in Olympia gives police more authority to pursue people suspected of committing a crime. What impact do you believe this will have on improving public safety? Significant, moderate, none, or it will make us less safe? Thank God none of you chose it's going to make us less safe. I would have worried I'm not doing my job. Many of you feel it's going to have a significant to moderate impact on public safety. Chris says it's excellent that LEOs will be able to pursue, but if a judge doesn't hold someone accountable and doesn't lock them up, what good will come of it? Maybe the deterrence will help. That's why I chose moderate. And I think that's a good point because we need criminals to know that they can't just do that. Remember back to when the beginning of the police pursuit thing went into effect and the guy in Seattle who had his like girlfriend against her will in the car was fleeing police and calling 911 and saying this is an illegal police pursuit. The idea that criminals don't know what the law is ridiculous. Also with drug trafficking, I've said this, best gift the drug cartel has had in years to have Washington State have an explicit policy that unless you are suspected of a violent crime and there's probable cause of a violent crime, which is a high bar, which is what Democrats did in 2021, they can't pursue you, gift to the drug cartel. So I do think the effect it could have, perhaps more than anything else, is a deterrent. So Chris, I agree with you. Street says, positive pursuit changes need support from the prosecutors and judges, moderate changes at best, unless support and prosecution happen. So really, I think that follow through is going to be critical. Tracy Stark says it will be significant if they prosecute, but it has to be both. Kathleen says, I just hope legislators don't change it and water it down again. We must remain vigilant about what our legislators are plotting behind closed doors. And that's very true. We talked on the show yesterday, one of the incentives for lawmakers to perhaps pass the police pursuit as opposed to letting it go to voters is now they have an opportunity in 2025 and 2026 to amend it. So we do have to remain vigilant. And they're going to go out on the campaign trail. And even the lawmakers who fought for years against changing the police pursuit law, but at the final hour decided to pass the initiative. Now they're going to use that on the campaign trail, and they're going to say, oh, I voted to give police their power back. I supported that initiative after fighting it tooth and nail for 2 years. So staying vigilant, making sure we know who said what, making sure we know who supported what, and not letting them get away with lies on the campaign trail, say what they need to say to get votes, and then go back to Olympia next year and undo it. We will not allow it. We will not tolerate it. Let me see. Let me fit one more in here. Debbie says, it's a start. Now we need to hold the criminals accountable for their actions with jail time. So a lot of that. It is true. The criminal justice system needs to work as a cohesive unit. And cops can be out there arresting people left and right and up and down. But if they go get cut free by an activist judge, well, it doesn't do much good, does it? All right, some other questions and comments. Can I just read first before we close the show, Nicole? You have this picture in here?
I do.
Oh my gosh, you see this new flag behind us if you're watching the show? Look at it. It is a cool wooden flag. I mean, you would not believe the detail in the carving. Well, we got it today. His friend, so Jeffrey Russell, this is an email we got into our inbox. Nicole has a picture of Jeffrey Russell. So Jeffrey is a fan of the show. He told his friend Dave that he appreciates the work that we're doing, and he had carved us this American flag. And he wanted Dave to bring it to us because Jeff is dealing with terminal cancer. So Jeff is like a lifelong, really talented woodworker, and he's a fan of the show and what we're trying to do with the show. Carved us that American flag. And because his health is in such poor shape and he's dealing with terminal cancer, he asked his friend Dave to drop it off for us this morning. Oh, it's breaking my heart.
So sweet.
It's so sweet. And Jeff, we love it. We absolutely love it. So now it's going to have this nice place behind me. And I'm very impressed with the woodwork, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you guys can't see the detail of it, but between each of the red and white stripes, it's totally carved out in there. So it really has this effect of looking like it's sort of waving. And it's got this pedestal so it can sit up straight but still look like it's waving. So it's really awesome. So, Jeffrey, we wish you the best with what you're dealing with your health. David, thank you so much for stopping by and for sharing it with us. And it just means a lot to us. We got a lot of little knickknacks on the shelf. I wish you could see. Can you take – you can't take our wide shot. Oh, sorry.
I can't right now.
Our friend Kevin dropped us off.
Live interview.
Yeah, our friend Kevin made us a clock, so that's up. We've got, you know, stuffed animal that was made for us. So we're collecting some tchotchkes. Mm-hmm. We're collecting tchotchkes from people. Yeah, we got some bracelets, some like Taylor Swift-esque patriotic bracelets. Yeah. So we love that kind of stuff. You guys are so sweet to us. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So boop. Okay, so thank you, Jeffrey. That really means a lot to us, and we were really touched by that this morning. Okay, GTBD00 Gumug Jojak, which I told him, gave us a super chat, so now I have to say your whole name. $9.99 for the swear jar. Thank you. Sorry, guys. I've been doing better, but sometimes I just get ahead of myself.
A little worked up.
Matthew Cook says, I got a call back from Senator Wynn's office. Decent call with his policy guy. Couldn't answer how I'm supposed to pay for electrifying my house and told me it would happen around 2045, but then backtracked. You know, that's the thing is they set these goals that impact us in the moment. And they say, hey, we got to do this for XYZ. And then, you know, they're out of office by the time like those deadlines come up or whatever it is. And they're never going to be accountable for it. So, but that's impressive. And I like Senator Wynn. So I'm glad that his office actually gave you a call back. I think that's awesome. Michelle D'Angelo said, yeah, check out the poverty level in Washington State. My family of four does not qualify and no rebates on our almost $500 electrical bill for January. Unfortunately, our house doesn't have a gas line. So, no rebates on a high electrical bill. At least you won't have to pay for the electrification element of it, though. On parental rights, Erica Dorning says, I told my school counselor in high school that I wanted to end it all, and they were able to tell my mom, who promptly got me help and watched extra closely to make sure I was okay. That's the kind of thing. It's like you're with your parent more than you're with teachers. And the idea that, you know, sensitive mental health information where you might be going through some real challenging times as a young person should be hidden from your parent is insane. It is absolutely insane. On long-term care and the SEIU feeding talking points to the Democrats, Lolly Wilson says, I'm a caregiver and I do not support this nonsense. Susan Blake says, I have two friends with parents in long-term care. It doesn't seem they're able to access any of those funds because it just started. And so you have to pay into it for a long period of time before you can benefit from it. So for people who were getting close to retirement, who were never going to benefit from it, it's like just stealing money from them. There were some fixes to try to rectify that. You know, people moving out of state just because they want to, because like, let's say you don't want to live here anymore. You want to live in Florida. Well, you'd had to pay into it for all that years. You're never going to get that money. They tried to change that this session to be if you're going to retire out of state, that might be different. But it's an example of the lipstick on a pig thing, like we were talking about with the gas ban. If your bill is so bad that you are trying to rush through changes and clumsily and like it's so confusing, people don't even understand if they qualify or don't qualify, mm-hmm. it's not a good piece of legislation. It's not. And same with the gas. If you have to lie about a bill, it's not a good bill. If you can't explain the effects of the bill on someone, it's not a good bill. If someone doesn't know if the bill impacts them, it's not a good bill. It's bad governance.
The majority of the state is trying to come up with or getting initiative signed to get rid of your bill.
Yeah. I'm sorry. More than 400,000 people want to make your bill optional. Not even get rid of it.
Here's the sign.
Just say, hey, either I want it or I don't.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's like a socialization. It is a socialization thing, but it's like, this is something you're paying into that you would get money for down the road. People have every right to say, no, thanks. I don't want that money down the road, so I'm going to keep my money now.
Yep.
It's interesting in that aspect where it's you're giving something up by saying you don't want to be part of the program, you know, $30,000 in benefits later on. You should have that choice.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've already been sent a couple different ads that they've put out about this. And they're ridiculous because they're so misleading. Or they just, I mean, there was a family that was talking about they wanted to take care of her elderly mother. So they moved her in from out of state. So she's using that money to care for her mother. Number one, wouldn't care for your mother that moved here from out of state.
Yeah.
And
because it's attached to the person,
yeah,
right?
It's attached to the person. So you can't use it. If you haven't paid into it, you're not getting it.
Right.
And then it doesn't start yet. Like you don't get it for a few more years.
No.
So
the ads are just going to be lies.
They're
obviously
lies.
So let me see.
But feel free to send them because I'll pull them and point out why they're lies.
Yes, 100%. So keep sending us any lies you see about the initiatives. We would love to see them. Human Centipede says total diversity of thought on that Trump bash-a-thon. Mm-hmm. Shelley says, how did Washington get so weird?
That's a good question.
Normal people stop talking.
I guess.
Let me see. One more. Figueroa Yashira on the a desire to take down that famous photograph from VA facilities. The VA is having a hard time even in many issues. The VA is having a hard time in many issues, and they're talking about a picture. Yeah, that's the thing is, like, you should be focused on trying to better serve veterans, which you're not doing very well. It's improved in recent years, I will give you that. And your concern is writing this memorandum that's like 2 pages long about why a picture, a famous photograph, needs to be taken out of VA facilities. Okay, get your priorities right. Mm-hmm. All right, good comments per the usual. And with that, let us get to our closing sanity check. I just thought there was a nice moment on the floor of the Senate during all the hustle and bustle yesterday with the initiatives that I wanted to play, because it's a sentiment we don't hear very often. So Senator John Lovick, who is a Democrat, also used to work as a state trooper, so he's been in law enforcement. He took a moment of personal privilege to stand up because this happened in his district and reflect on the passing of the death of Washington State Trooper Christopher Gatt.
Mr. President, I just want to take a second to thank and honor Trooper Christopher Gadd, badge number 10927, who was killed in the line of duty. And, Mr. President, English writer William Penn said, an able yet humble man is a jewel worth a kingdom. An able yet humble man is a jewel worth a kingdom. Trooper Gadd was an able man, and he was very, very humble. He was just doing his job. Doing his job of protecting the public. He was struck on the right shoulder, southbound Interstate 5 in the Marysville area. And losing Trooper Gadd shows all of us just what a difficult job it is to serve and protect the public. I will say this, Mr. President, I parked on the shoulders of the roadway for thousands and thousands of hours. It's the only place where the troopers are able to park. He was struck and killed by a reckless driver. And, Mr. President, I will just say this. I think we are all experiencing the fatigue of reckless drivers. We are experiencing the fatigue of drunk drivers. We're also experiencing the fatigue of aggressive drivers. And Mr. President, I hope we'll just take a moment to just think about the great work that our men and women do every single day. Their goal and their job is to go out there and to keep us safe in our homes, to keep us safe on our streets, and to protect our children in their schools. So today, Mr. President, it was Trooper Gadd's job to serve, and it is our job to remember.
Yeah, and I think that's a sentiment we don't hear often enough in Olympia, but it's a sentiment I would like to hear not just when we lose one of our men and women in uniform. And that seems to be the time when people come out and talk about the support and talk about the difficult work that they're doing and the sacrifices that they're making. And then what do we see, you know, most of the time in Olympia and during legislative sessions is attacking law enforcement, is trying to make it more difficult and more dangerous for law enforcement to do their jobs. And so I, for one, hope sentiments like that can be remembered at times when they're debating and discussing difficult policy that is going to make the lives and the jobs of law enforcement more dangerous. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder for subscribers, we have a live subscriber Q&A tonight at 7 p.m., so bring your best questions. The live link will be posted about an hour before we go live, so I'd like to see as many views possible for that. I don't know why my voice got so high. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. It's just $5 a month, and you're helping us save country and democracy and the state and all of that. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.